From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen. Today, we kick off our podcast with a series of interviews focusing on women who are raising their children outside of their own culture. What are the benefits to raising your child abroad? What are the challenges? And what's the advice these women are able to offer to others who find themselves in a similar situation? My first guest is Agnieszka Koniak. A native of Poland, she studied international culture at the Jagiellonian University in Krakow and met her husband, Salvador, while on an Erasmus scholarship at the University of Castilla-La Mancha. After finishing her degree some 10 years ago, she moved to Spain. Today, she's a teacher in a public school and the very busy mother of two beautiful girls, Sara and Emilia. Welcome, Agnieszka, and thank you so much for being here.
Hello, and thank you for having me.
Your daughters are still quite young. How old are they exactly?
Sara is 4, well, almost turning 5. In March, she'll be 5. And Emilia is 2.5, exactly.
And were they both born in Spain?
Yes, they were both born in the same hospital in Cuenca in Spain. And that's how everything started.
Well, can you share a bit with us about your pregnancy and your experience with childbirth?
Of course. Well, when it comes to, you know, everything related with doctors and medical care and everything, that was great because social security in Spain is really developed comparing to other countries and also to mine. In Poland, it maybe many things are more complicated than in here. So that part was great. And when it comes to differences in culture, well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that in the hospital, we received many visits, but they were not our relatives. They were visiting the woman that was in the same room as me. And that was, for me, it was quite shocking because I was like, oh my goodness, I really need to get some rest. And why those people are keep coming and it's like 10:30 p.m. So, but that's a Spanish thing, okay? The day is longer.
It is longer. A Spanish thing that in general in Spain, people go to bed later and it's quite normal for people to be having dinner later and entertaining guests in their home or in this case at the hospital until
exactly.
Much later than you're used to.
Exactly. So that was like the first thing that I noticed. As a young mother, right, that it's not going to be the same, or it's not going to be the way that you thought it's going to be, right? And another surprise was still when I was pregnant, the name selection for my child, yeah, with Sara and also with Emilia, it was, it is a problem for international family because we wanted to make it easier for her in the future. So we were trying to find a name that would sound the same in Polish and in English. And in English, obviously, also would be fine, but in Polish and in Spanish. Mm-hmm. And it's not an easy task. And if first you have to find that kind of name and then you have to both agree about it. So we finally picked Sara, and that sounds the same in Polish and in Spanish. And we told that to we talked about it in our family, and we talked we gave the news to our relatives, and that was the first surprise. Like, okay, maybe you could try to find a name that would be like more Catholic or more Christian, like, you know, like Maria or something like that. And
which is a very popular name in
Yes,
Spain.
Actually, my mother's name is Maria.
Your Polish mother.
My Polish mother. So, and in Poland, we have this thing that right now it's normal that your child is not going to have the same name as you. I mean, the parents' name are different from children's names, and in Spanish and in Spain. There is still this strong tendency to name the same that to have the same name the child and the parent. Yeah, so obviously it was clear that I'm not going to name her Agnieszka.
That doesn't sound the same in Spanish and Polish.
That doesn't sound the same in Spain, in Spanish, exactly. But, you know, they had, okay, if it's not going to be the same, so make it like, you know, more, they were feeling maybe more comfortable with something like Maria or something like that. And also many, many people that were not part of my family, they would express their opinion about the name, and that was surprising.
What do you mean, like friends or colleagues?
Yeah, friends, colleagues, or my former students that I met on the street. I'm like, how are you? Are you pregnant? Oh, a girl. Well, how are you going to name her? Sara, what a short name. Maybe you should call her Sara Maria or Sara Alejandra or Sara whatever. You know, it's such a short name. I was like, okay, it's fine, short. It's her name. It's comfortable when you're traveling. It's comfortable when you have to fill in billions of papers in your future life, right?
Right. So, and simply, you're the mother.
That's another thing. Like, okay, I respect your opinion, but could you please keep it to yourself? Right. So that was the surprising part of like, okay, everybody had an opinion about your decision, and they had to express it. And I said that, I mean, we respect, but, you know, keep it to yourself again. And another thing that surprised me a lot had to do with earrings.
Really?
Yes. I still remember that conversation that we had over a dinner with my family and relatives.
Your husband's family, right?
Yeah, my husband's family. Okay. Exactly. All Spanish.
Okay.
all the Spanish part of the family. And we were talking about what to prepare to my visit in hospital when the baby is born. You have to prepare the famous bag with everything, with a survival kit in the hospital, right?
Right.
So, and we were going like over, well, a kind of checklist that we were doing with the family. Like, okay, do you have diapers? Yes, diapers. Do you have baby's clothes? Yeah, baby clothes, towels, cosmetics, stuff like that. And I said, okay, I'm fine. I'm really prepared. Okay, thank you very much. I think we're good here, right? And then my mother-in-law said, oh my goodness, and earrings. And I was like, earrings? Why on earth would I take earrings? And actually, at the beginning, I thought that she was talking about my earrings.
Right.
And a doctor told me, okay, please don't bring any earrings, because in case we have to do some extra surgery or something, or we have to check something, that sometimes machines don't work well with when you have metal pieces in your body.
Okay.
So it's better not to have it. So that was my first thought. And then I realized, no, she's not talking about my earrings. She's talking about the earrings for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like shocked, like, why on earth would I pierce a newborn's ears?
Mm-hmm.
And it resulted that it's really a typical thing to do in Spain, that majority of girls come from the hospital with their ears pierced. So, and it was an issue in my family, because they were pushing us a bit to, you know, to do it at the hospital. So we had this conversation with my husband about this, and you know, my mother-in-law and my sister-in-law was trying to convince us that it's better for the child, and say, why is it better? Well, because directly she will be recognized by other people on the street that she's a girl, and also that she's going to be more beautiful and that kind of things. And we've talked about that, and it's okay. Apparently, we have a clash over here, a cultural clash,
mm-hmm.
and let's talk about that. And finally, we decided, you know, to do our small research about this issue. And it turns out that actually, from a medical point of view, it's not a good thing. I mean, that it can imply a fever, or it can get infected. So based our decision on medical facts, and we said, okay, we're not going to do it. I mean, we don't care what it's the cultural standard in Spain, but objectively speaking, and putting cultural issues away, that's not a good thing for our child. And so that was like, you know, the first no to very obvious thing that is done to children in Spain.
And that's a real shift in power, isn't it? Because,
it is.
You know, your mother-in-law is sort of the figurehead of the family. Your mother-in-law, maybe your father-in-law. I would say on the theme of, on the subject of earrings, probably more your mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. But to step into that role of mother and say, no, actually, we're going to make this other decision that is not in accordance with your decision. And how did that play out? Did she accept it?
Well, not from the beginning. Actually, it was like issue coming back in several conversations, even after Sarah was born.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I told her once, okay, if you want to pierce her ears, just take a needle and do it.
And you told your mother-in-law,
yes,
take a needle and do it.
I was really like fed up with all that
and
issue.
And what did she say?
And she said, no, I'm not going to do it. You have to do it at the hospital. A professional has to do it. And I said, okay, what's the difference? You need a hole in her ear.
Mm.
So I think
and
that
she wasn't willing to actually make the hole.
Exactly. Mm. Because I think it's culturally, they don't see the process.
Right.
Of making a hole in a child's body. Yeah. It's just like they see the outcome, like, okay, she's going to be more beautiful. People will recognize her on the street and things like that. But nobody's focusing on like, okay, how.
Right. The reality.
Yeah. The reality. How.
So
how
your daughter is almost five now. She's in kindergarten.
Right.
Does she have an opinion about earrings? Does she see other girls with earrings, or have you talked to her about it?
Well, sometimes she mentioned it and she said, okay, someday I would like to have earrings. And I said, okay, whenever you want.
Mm.
Yes.
So even at age four, almost five, if she asked you for them now, would you allow her to have them?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yes, because in Poland, normally we wait like to the first communion age, like eight and 10 years old, because that's the age where girls actually notice that they want to have something in their ears, and it's a very personal decision. And I remember mine. I remember the pain of having my ears pierced, and I would like for her. I want that decision to be hers, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to show her also that it's not me who's going to decide about her body.
Right.
So it's another lesson that it's not direct, maybe, but it's over there, and it was shocking that in Spain they don't see it that way.
Hmm. Yeah, it is a milestone moment where you put her control of her own body in her hands.
Exactly.
It's her decision to make. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I also, in my culture, it's also quite tied to that age. 8, 9, first, for people who are religious, it's tied to First Communion.
Mm-hmm.
So there really is a milestone there, a watershed moment.
And also over here, that is based, this decision, like one of the arguments, yes, that we had, and one of the pros of having earrings early is that everybody will know that she's a girl. I mean, why everybody needs to know that she's a girl? If they have a doubt, just ask me. Right?
Interesting.
And even now she's almost five, and sometimes she's wearing a pink dress, you know, to be really, if you want to show that she's a girl, like wear pink and put ponytails and
right,
like really, really, really girl outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And people, for the first thing that they see is that she's not having earrings. And sometimes people confused her with a boy,
mm-hmm,
because of that, because she's not wearing earrings. So at this point, my relatives, my Spanish relatives, they were right. I mean, she's confused with a boy.
Well, I mean, you have to take into consideration that we're in Spain, right? So we are living in a context where people use that visual as a cue about what gender a child is.
Exactly.
Right. And you are raising her here. So does that raise any doubt in you about, you know, did I make the right decision for my child?
Well, that more, I think it raised doubt about the point of, I mean, maybe the level of awareness about gender in Spanish society.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
which is a different question.
It's a different, exactly. It's a different, completely different podcast.
Right. I'll have you back for that one. Gender in Spain.
Exactly. But it's Sarah, she wouldn't mind. She asked me once, and then I said, okay, we can do it, but you know, it will hurt. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, let's wait. I was like, okay, mm-hmm, fine. whenever you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful lesson that you're teaching her. You know, let's look at the facts. Let's tell the truth about what it's going to feel like.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important, yeah, to keep that many things clear to them, mm-hmm. and to put away the cultural thing. And it's hard. As a parent, it's hard to do that sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, when you and I were preparing for this conversation, you said something that really caught my ear, which was that in Spain, there's a quite short maternity leave.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So why don't you talk to me a little bit about that? What was your maternity leave like? What is a maternity leave like under Polish law, for mm-hmm. example?
So in Spain, more or less, for a mother, it's 4 months. Well, it's 16 weeks exactly, so it's not even full 4 months.
Okay.
Plus a month for breastfeeding, but it doesn't matter actually if you're breastfeeding or you're giving a bottle. It's just the term, okay? So it's 5 months.
Okay.
Let's say it's more or less 5 months. And so many mothers, if they want to go back to their work before pregnancy, they have only that time, and they need to decide if you want to stay with your child, you have to leave your job, or you get fired, right? Because
right.
if you don't want to appear there, obviously.
So the
story is done. But in Poland, it's 1 year, and I think it's really a minimum, and it's not just because in Poland it's 1 year. Again, if we put away cultural thing or mm-hmm. political thing or mm-hmm. organization of a country or social psychology or whatever, from my point of view as a mother, I think it's a minimum time, this 12 months. I mean, 9 months they're inside of you,
right?
Okay, so let's give them at least 12 months when they're out and to be with you and to show them the world and to be with them and to raise your child in a friendly
environment.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
In a friendly environment, and not, you know, and it's a big lie to me. It's a lie, and many people they use that lie to fool themselves. I think in Spain, the sentence that I often heard is like, you know, if you lived in daycare, she will socialize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how a baby, like 6 months old baby, can socialize? They socialize with your breast. They're not socializing with their friends in a daycare. They can't talk. They cannot see properly yet,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's from biological and point of view, it's a lie. I mean, they mm-hmm. won't socialize.
Well,
they will miss you, but they won't be able to socialize the way that we think that they would probably.
Right. I think some people are in a position, some women are in a position where, you know, whether they're a single mother or their husband is unemployed or doesn't make enough money to support the entire family, they're in a position where they have to go back to work, right? When their maternity leave is over, they have to go back to work. And so in a lot of those cases, they just to sort of survive psychologically, they justify that decision.
Obviously.
And so they child will be better off in daycare.
Right, but if you, it's also, we're coming back to personal decision. If you want to say that to yourself, go ahead. You know, but don't make it a statement, like general statement for every woman.
Right. Well, it's a very personal decision.
Exactly.
So what was how did your family handle maternity leave?
Well, we had another very tough conversation about my house economical level and, you know, and the money and how we're going to make it and everything. And we decided that it's better for me to stay at home with my child. For the first year, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That was my, you know, my bottom line, like, okay, at least 12 months. Just for her.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're going to have many different stuff, but 12 months just for her.
I just want to be clear for our listeners. Under Spanish law, there are 4 months plus 1 month, so a total of 5 months, of paid maternity leave.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay? So it's not that your job is waiting for you, but you're not getting paid. You are receiving your salary while you're not working.
Right.
And in Poland...
And it's paid by Social Security.
Right.
Yes.
And in Poland, it's the same situation, but it's 12 months.
Exactly.
So the decision that you made in your family, I'm sorry if I'm repeating, but I just want to make sure it's clear, because for some people, this is a very foreign concept. in your family, what you and Salva decided to do was that you were paid for those 5 months. And then at the point when your paychecks stopped, mm-hmm. you decided, I'm not going to go back to work so that I continue to receive paychecks. I'm going to stay home and we're going to subsist on your income, on Salva's exactly. income for the remaining 7 months.
Exactly. And it's a question of priorities simply, right? I mean, and of course, if you can afford it. We were lucky enough that with my husband's salary, we could afford that.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's an extra expense, right? Because you're living on with one salary, and so there's only one income at home.
Right.
But there are so many other things.
Right.
Right.
Did these experiences? You've talked a little bit about the dynamic with your in-laws, with your husband's family around choosing a name, piercing your child's ears or not, your daughter's ears or not. The length of your maternity leave. Did these experiences change you in any way?
Of course. I think I'm a better person now. And I see father and when you said the sentence about mothers that they have to do something because, you know, they're alone at home, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have their partners. So I really appreciate the communication that we have with Salva and that we can talk about many things and that we live in his country, obviously, we live in Spain, that's his country, that's his culture, but that he is open enough and that he's loving and caring enough to accept that culturally we can have differences and that we need to work that out for our family, that it's not 100% Spanish and it's not 100% Polish, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's I think that's for a couple and for me as a mother and as a wife also, it makes you richer. Yeah, it makes you think double about many things.
Can you think of any examples where you've given some examples where you didn't opt for the Spanish option culturally, mm-hmm. or as far as the name was concerned, that had some religious overtones as far as choosing a name like mm-hmm. Maria or Jesus, this sort of thing. Can you think of any examples where you looked at the facts and you and your husband had a frank conversation and then you chose the Spanish option over the Polish option?
Well, yes, the thing that I think it's better for a child in Spain is all the rhythm of the meals.
Okay.
And because in Spain, if you don't eat between 2 and 4 p.m., you won't eat.
Your lunch.
Lunch,
you don't eat,
yes,
lunch,
exactly.
From
lunch.
2 to 4.
Because the lunchtime is very marked, like socially, and the restaurants work that way. And at 4 p.m., they're closed, simply, mm-hmm. right? And also families normally get that rhythm, right? The children have finished school around 1:30 or 2, and then there's lunchtime and it's very, very organized, right? I come from family where it was a bit of a disaster, okay? We could have lunch at 3 one day, then at 4, and then at about 5 because...
In Poland.
Yeah, in Poland, mm-hmm. yes. My parents were working. Many times I had to prepare lunch for me and for my brother. So it's not... And it's not a drama over... I mean, in Poland, okay? Mm-hmm. One day you eat at 4, another day you eat at 2, whatever. Okay, it's not the daily rhythm for mealtimes. It's not that marked like in Spain. But, you know, having this conversation, thinking about all of this, for a child it's better to have that marked and really clear rhythm for meals, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And they feel more secure and it's better for their health, yes? And to have this first course, second course and a dessert that sometimes a yogurt, sometimes their fruit, you know, it's this part of Spanish culture around food and organization of your meals is really marked, but I think it's good. I think it's better than in mm-hmm. Poland.
I have had a similar experience with the culture around food in Spain. It is very, very...
strict.
Yeah. Yes, the structure around mealtimes and food is extremely strict and extremely constraining. And so just as a human being who is looking for freedom and who comes from a culture that isn't like that, you know, you're sort of looking for, well, where's the escape? Where's my self-expression? Why can't I do it my way? But you're absolutely right. The experience of becoming a mother and sort of seeing it through the eyes of someone who's taking care of a little one, it's true. You do evolve and you sort of take a deep breath and you realize it's actually better this way. Mm-hmm. You know, I absolutely agree with you on that. As we established, your children are still quite young, but can you see them benefiting from their bicultural upbringing, even at ages 4 and 2?
Definitely. The thing, the first thing, and obvious, I think, for everybody, is the language. That
the two languages.
Yeah, they are the two languages. Mm. I mean, I talk to them to my daughters. I talk to them in Polish. And my husband talks to them in Spanish, obviously. And there are facts, and you know, researchers like not just it's not just my opinion. Yes, that bilingual brain, it's a bit different. Yeah, and you see the world in a different way because you see that the option or the way of doing things that you know is not the only one. Mm-hmm. So you actually help your children to grow with an open mindset.
Mm.
So I think it's a beautiful thing and a beautiful heritage for all families that are bilingual, trilingual, or they use more languages than just one in their house.
Would you say that's the best thing about raising your children abroad?
I think so. Yeah, the possibility to see from the beginning that that what is called normal is not objectively normal, that there are ways of doing things, and that the previous step of recognizing that it's not only way gives you some kind of freedom. Right. And helps you to maybe in the future. I hope so. And I hope that for my children that in the future, I mean, we never know. I mean, today they live in Spain, but maybe in 20 years they will find a Japanese boyfriend. I don't know. Or girlfriend. I don't know. Right. But that what gives me a bit of comfort as a mother is to see that they are growing already in an international context, and then they see that her mother's way or her father's way or her teacher's way is not the only perfect way, that there are other ways to front problems and to find solutions.
That's quite hopeful, you know, to think about, because really what we're doing when we're raising our children is we're creating citizens of the world. And to think of a world that's populated with people who've been raised in that way is quite hopeful.
Yes, yes. We're helping also to create a better world, yeah, yes. A better future for everybody.
Exactly. Well, Agnieszka, thank you so much for being here with us today. I really appreciate your time. I know
thank
you don't
you.
Have a lot of that. And I hope you'll come back and talk with us in the future. You mentioned a future podcast, so I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay, thank you for having me. Thank you for this wonderful conversation.
Next time on Listen, we'll be joined by Sue Ramiro Ibáñez, a native of Great Britain, raising her son and daughter in rural Spain. Hope you can join us. Listen is sponsored by RAV. Cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. The executive producer of Listen is Laura Muñoz Solera. Our technical director and engineer is Iñaki Martínez, with technical support from Juan Jesús Martínez. Our web guru is Lauren Lovett. Additional engineering and original music from Lucas Muñoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.